Hello everyone, welcome to Small Biz Tips. Guys, I am excited. I am excited. I'm excited. This gentleman is like a Wizard of Oz of Amazon. So I had to bring him in. What's going on, Dan?
Jaber, good to see you, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
100%. I'm excited to have you, man. So before we get to the goods, who is Dan?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I'm Dan Brownstrom, the founder CEO of a company called Channel Key. And Channel Key is a full service channel management agency supporting brands and manufacturers and advertisers on Amazon. So I've been running this business since 2017, been selling on Amazon since 2010, done over $1 billion in sales through the Amazon platform over the years.
Say that
Yeah, we've sold a lot of stuff through Amazon over the years.
Wow,
Spent
$1 billion.
hundreds of millions in
Jeez.
media. So we're very much entrenched in the Amazon ecosystem for sure.
So, but before you guys were able to sell over $1 billion on Amazon for the brands that you work with,
Yeah.
how do you even get into this?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I've got I went to Ohio State, graduated in the early 2000s, had a couple of buddies there that I met who were entrepreneurs, and we ended up starting a business in 2000 and it was 2008, 2009, right when the economy fell apart. It was a total side hustle, and we just really wanted to learn how to sell products on the internet. So we were sourcing goods in a private label model from Alibaba, again back in 2008, 2009, selling them on eBay, eventually a bunch of micro websites focused on specific product categories. Again, it was a side hustle for me. And then my partner started doing it full time and moved to Vegas and started going to all these trade shows in Las Vegas and talking to all these well-known brands that sold products into Macy's and Nordstrom's and buying those products at wholesale and reselling them on Amazon in 2010, which was very early on, pre-advertising days, early FBA days. That's how we started.
It's crazy because around 2008, 2009, I too was just graduating college. So I remember those times. It was challenging, but you guys were like the pioneer because not a lot of people was doing this back then. So
Yeah, it was early. Yeah, it was I don't know. We're very fortunate, Gilbert, right? I don't know if we saw what Amazon would become, but I think this concept and idea of selling stuff on the internet was interesting, and that you could literally source finished goods directly from manufacturers via Alibaba at that time was super interesting, right? And if you think about what Amazon ultimately has done for a lot of people and entrepreneurs, is removed barriers to entry to build businesses, which is really cool. And that could be a product company, it could be a brand, it could be a software company, it could be an agency like Channel Key. It's really cool.
Well,
It's
I'm
really cool.
curious because building that business and like what were some of the biggest lessons that you guys learned
Yeah.
building that first business? Because still early, but I'm sure you're not knowing what you don't know, you just keep going. What are
Yeah.
some of those lessons that you guys learned throughout that?
Yeah. So in the early days, right, there was two companies, right? Channel Key today spun out of that business. Channel Key is a service-based company. That company is a product-based business that we bought inventory, stored the inventory in a warehouse and shipped it to the customer or shipped it to Amazon. I think in the early days, obviously we didn't know what we didn't know. And learning how to sell on Amazon at that time was different and unique. There wasn't a playbook, right? So it was learning how the nuances and the dynamic of the marketplace and how it works and what are the triggers that might define whether or not you have success selling a specific product. And I think one of the biggest learnings was that given that there were very minimal barriers to entry, right? We built a business starting with private label, then it really grew when we became a reseller. And ultimately, what we became was that we were trading commodities on Amazon. And since there was low barriers to entry, guess what? Other people started trading commodities on Amazon, and we started trading on price and competing on price, which was not necessarily what we wanted to become, right? It wasn't a there wasn't a moat around that business. We could buy a pallet worth of, you know, Tommy Hilfiger wallets, and they would be great for 30 days. But in day 31, the price would fall out, and all of a sudden you have to liquidate the inventory.
So gotcha.
I think the learning was around kind of understanding how to create a controlled model that's protected on that platform, which took multiple iterations to get there. And ultimately we landed back where we started, which was focusing on private label, where you have, you know, the first or second cost directly from the manufacturer, you own the brand, you control the distribution.
Yeah.
That became the product model that we chose to ultimately stand up in the long term. And we said, any other brands, we don't necessarily want to buy their inventory, but we want to represent them as an agency.
I'm curious, right? Because when you go from that business, when did that shift happen and said, okay, I'm going to have that agency that represent all these brands? When did Channel Key became that concept? You're like, okay, this makes sense.
Yeah. So it wasn't like a clear cut crossover, but around 2015, 2016 is when we started having that conversation. So the progression is, we started as a private label business. Then we became a reseller, right? So private label, you own the brand. Reseller, you don't own the brand.
No,
you get other people's products. And then we said, you know what? So the progression was, instead of just being a straight up reseller, we became a value added reseller. So we would go to these brands and say, hey, listen, you've got 20 sellers of this brown wallet, Tommy Hilfiger. The price is all over the place. Your catalog on Amazon does not look good. It's not representative of your website. There's not a good experience. There's no cohesive marketing strategy. So we'd go to Tommy Hilfiger and say, hey, Tommy, let us be your exclusive seller on Amazon. Get rid of all these other sellers. We'll hold price. And in exchange for that exclusivity, we'll also manage your catalog, do SEO.
Oh, wow.
We'll do your media and spend on advertising. Right. And so that was the first moment in time where we said, you know what, we're going to provide more value than just being a reseller.
Yeah.
Okay. And so part of that model resonated. Okay. And I think the part that resonated for me was, hey, we're going to provide service to you or extra value. But the way we packaged it wasn't exactly right. Okay. Because we're buying your inventory.
Yeah. And we're giving you value.
We're doing these services. Right. And it requires you to be able to control your distribution. Right. And so there was a little bit of fuzziness in that model where we would look at each other and say, who's the customer in this relationship? Are we the customer because we bought the inventory, or are they the customer because they gave us exclusivity? And it was very unclear always.
Yeah.
And so the progression became, you know what? If we're going to buy inventory and sell it, it's got to be our brand. We make the most margin on it. We have the most control. And anybody else's brand, okay, we're going to create a service-based model because that is the way to provide the most amount of value, the most amount of market for the brand, and the cleanest way for us to do business as well. So it was a progression.
No, I love it. I love it because once you guys have clarity on who's the customer and figure out how you can split the services, boom, you got to take off with Channel Key. Now, tell me more about Channel Key, because a lot of people don't understand what exactly you guys do, right? So tell us a little bit more about it. And how the hell did you guys sold over $1 billion on Amazon? That's mind blowing.
Yeah. So Channel Key, we're a fully remote agency at this point. I've been running it since officially January 2017. I got about 85 people on my team. We're close partners with Amazon. We are designed to be a full service shop. So in essence, brands come to us and say, hey, listen, we're lost on Amazon. We're not getting the results we want. We don't have a strategy. And where we come in is we build them a very robust strategic business plan on Amazon. Okay. That takes into account pretty much every primary component of the business: catalog, analytics, forecasting, media spend, product launches, et cetera. And basically we build that plan, and then my team executes that plan. Right. So we've got graphic designers on staff. We've got copywriters on staff. We've got analysts on staff. We've got digital marketers on staff. We're doing a lot of DSP work on Amazon. Right.
What's so DSP?
It's Amazon's programmatic ad buying demand side platform. So it's a way to programmatically buy ads through the Amazon platform.
Got it. Got it.
Right.
Okay. So, you have this whole team working on brands. How do you determine which brand to work with and which not? Because
Good
there's
question.
lots of brands out there.
Yeah, it's a good question. And that changes over time, Gilbert. So
Yeah.
in the early days, when you're trying to stand up a business
Yeah.
and your problems are different than when what they are today, right?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
you know, in the early days, I've got to make payroll, I've got to try and get this business going. And what invariably happens is you're willing to take on more work, right? And I don't want to say take on everybody, but in the early days, sometimes you have to, right? Because
Yeah.
you got to learn and you got to build, and that's part of the deal. So over time, what we've done is refine our ICP, which is our ideal client profile.
Gotcha.
And typically, and so what's happened for us is we've gone up market, right? In the early days, we'd work with really small sellers or new sellers, and where we've landed ultimately today, given the value of the service we provide, the cost of the service that we
Yeah.
provide, we've realized that the right space for us to play is in the mid-market and the enterprise market. So working with larger
Gotcha.
brands, established brands that have distribution outside of Amazon. And we try to focus a lot on in consumables as a category, but we're generally agnostic, right? So it's about, I think, resources and size of business that can absorb our structure, right? That's
Gotcha.
what
So
sense.
just want to make sure I'm clear. Let's say it's a CPG brand. They're in the
Yeah.
mid-market space, doing over, let's say, $10, $20 million already. But they don't have a presence on Amazon. That's when they'll come to you, or they have one, but it's crappy.
It could be all the above, Gilbert. It could be, hey,
Gotcha.
launched on Shopify or TikTok Shop and want to stand up an Amazon presence. It could be, hey, our Amazon business is flatlined and we're not getting the results that we want from either our in-house team or our current agency, and they need a change or a new direction. Typically, our clients are already selling on Amazon when they come to
Yeah.
us, given the profile of business size that we want to go after. And it's more of a refinement, or a cleanup, or a revised strategy,
Gotcha,
that's
gotcha.
needed.
I'm curious because, some people have an amazing experience with Amazon.
Yeah.
Everything is going well, they're killing it in sales, but some people have a great opinion that turned into very crappy really quickly. How do you
Yeah.
guys handle stuff like that? Because, sometimes Amazon will shut their account down. Like,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so interesting. So again, selling on Amazon since 2010,
Yeah.
it's always been hard,
Ah.
and it's always been that way.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you can't just pick up the phone and call Amazon and say, "Hey,
Yeah.
why'd you put my account down?" Right, and talk to somebody like that. Doesn't work that way, and it's never worked that way, right? It's a retail business, but it's really a SaaS business. They treat it like a SaaS business. So, for us, we try to control what we can control,
Gotcha.
right? We work within terms of service. We're very white hat. We're very upfront with our clients, and things happen. Invariably, they
Yeah.
happen. You know, it could be a pesticides claim against a company that sells shoes, right? It doesn't make any sense, but
Yeah.
you've got to work through the process. You've got to work through the escalation. So for us, it's trying to expedite the resolution of those particular issues. We can't control Amazon,
Yeah.
right? You can't. And so for us, so we just need to provide the resources, the guidance, the support to help resolve these issues as quickly as possible.
I love it. I love it. And I'm glad you share that because, a lot of people think because you guys were able to do so much for so many brands that, you know everything and you can handle everything. But sometimes you gotta take it to Amazon itself,
Yeah.
which takes me to my next question, right? So, some people they have business on Amazon and now you're hearing about TikTok Shop, right? And they're called this the some people call it like the killer of Amazon. Like, what are your thoughts on TikTok Shop?
Yeah, I think TikTok Shop is really interesting, and I think it's making a splash. And you've got it's not just TikTok Shop. You've got Temu, you got Shein, right? We just had this. And Temu was advertising all over the place. So I've heard this statement. It's a bit provocative that these are Amazon killers. And my take is, I think that's hyperbolic in a way. And the reason I say that is because I believe the value proposition of Prime for consumers is still really strong.
Okay.
And Amazon for years lost money because they were reinvesting their dollars at either to AWS or into their operational and fulfillment infrastructure. Yeah. Okay. And so you've got a Prime member who's paying 100, what is it? 120 bucks a year or something right now. And they are used to same day delivery.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One
yeah,
day
yeah.
Delivery, 2 day delivery, free returns, easy peasy, which creates a lot of trust.
Yeah. Convenience and trust.
Convenience, trust, selection, okay, which is part of their flywheel. I think that that infrastructure that Amazon has built really entrenches them into the consumer's mind, right? Mm-hmm. And the trust they have in shopping for products. Now, I think the way that TikTok Shop is curated and the experience is super interesting and cool.
Yeah.
And I think they might take market share. And I think competition is always good. But yeah. Given the flywheel Amazon has built and the value of the Prime membership to consumers, I don't foresee anything being an Amazon killer at this point. Now, certainly they might take market share, right? And be competitive. Yeah. Competition is good. Okay. But e-com is still a small part of retail. Okay.
Yeah.
From a percentage perspective, it's continuing to grow. So it's still early. So competition is good. But any sensational headlines around TikTok shopping and Amazon killer, I think is majorly overblown.
Gotcha. Now, I'm curious about the business that you're actually building. You got 85 people, yeah, right? How do you guys go about hiring? And all of them are remote. How do you create a culture around that remote team? You know, what does that look like in your world?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I, we had an office pre-COVID. Yeah. So for us, I don't know, we had an office for what, 3-4 years prior to COVID, right? And so my feeling about team and culture has never changed.
Okay.
So in my business, we are in the people business.
Yeah.
Period, end of story, right? I've got team and staff and partners, and then we've got clients and software. I don't have trucks. I don't have a warehouse. I don't have a manufacturing facility. Okay. So for us, running a remote business, in my opinion, is very much a competitive advantage. Okay.
Gotcha.
Because I don't have to bear the expense of an office, and I can hire the best talent and people all over the world. My business does not require anybody to be in a certain location.
Yeah.
Really ever, right? Unless we're going to a meeting or going to see a client. And so my feeling on culture and how we drive culture since we had an office versus not having an office has not changed. But what has to change is the methods that you deploy the culture, right? So we create space for our team to have these collisions digitally, right? Huh. We're in an office, we don't have a water cooler, we're not in the lunchroom, we don't see each other, right?
Yeah.
And so for us, we have to create space to have those collisions. And so we've got a few policies. Some of these are policies we've had since day one. Like every single meeting we have with clients or internal is cameras on. Always.
Okay.
It's always cameras on. Because a large part of communication is nonverbal.
Yeah.
I want to see you. I want to see how you're doing. If I'm staring at a black screen, it's really hard to build a relationship with somebody. But if I can see you and I can see your background photos and I can see your cat running across your desk,
yeah.
I can see your kid walk in your office, that's very intimate. And that creates a connection. And I think it builds trust and builds a relationship. So we have things like that in place. We've got we've got a team whose job it is to create events where our team is connecting with each other on an informal basis. Mm. We're very active on Microsoft Teams and chat.
Yeah.
Topics, right? And so we create this space where we can have these informal digital collisions with people, and I can see you at
okay.
all times. And so, you know, I for me, there's really no difference between having an office and having a remote business, right? The concepts are the same, just the methods and way in which you deploy how you want to create interactions
yeah.
with the team differs. That's it, in my opinion.
I love it. I love it. So to kind of like wrap things up, right? I'm curious on two part. One, any small biz tips you can share with our audience based on like mistakes you've made in the past in your business and how that, you know, how were you able to solve them and how that could benefit someone else?
Yeah, I think a couple things. So first off, we use a model called EOS to run our book called Tractions by Gino Wickman. And there's
yes, that's one of my favorite books.
Yeah, EOS. And so I would suggest for any smaller business to, if there's no clear-cut operating system that you're using to run your company, how do you set goals? How do you run your meetings? How do you do your planning? How to evaluate your team and people? I would suggest that you read Gino Wickman's book called Traction and perhaps either find an implementer for EOS or consider self-implementing. It creates a lot of clarity and a North Star for small business owners who invariably are doing 50 different things all at once.
Yeah.
To make sure that you've got a plan A, and B, to understand at all times whether or not you're on or off the plan, right? I think that's critical for entrepreneurs and small business owners. And I think the second thing that I've learned the hard way is to try and quickly realize when you as the founder become the bottleneck in the business. Okay. So there are moments in time, especially when you're starting a company and growing a business, where you've had to do everything.
Yeah.
But there's a moment in time where you can't do everything. And there's a moment in time where you become the bottleneck and you start preventing the company from scaling and growing. And so realizing that, I think, is absolutely critical. And quite honestly, what helped me realize that A was my team. Okay. And B was using EOS or Traction. We did this exercise called the accountability chart exercise. And I realized that when I wrote it down on paper that I was in too many seats on the bus and I was the problem. So I think those are a couple elements I would consider for small
business. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. I love the book Traction. I read it a few times. How do people get in touch with you if they want to work with your team, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so we're pretty active in putting content out. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Dan Brownshire on LinkedIn. You can look up Channel Key on LinkedIn. You can check out our website. We're at channelkey.com. We're on YouTube. You can check out our YouTube channel. Just look up Channel Key or search my name, and we should be pretty easy to find.
Fantastic. Guys, definitely reach out to Dan, especially if you have a brand that's in a mid-market space that can use some of his services. So thanks for coming in today, Dan. This was awesome.
Yeah, Jalbert, it's awesome. Awesome to meet you. Thanks for having me, and appreciate the time.